Hello again, Mouthful with Shanti supporters. My name is Shanti Charan. I am your host. I appreciate y'all tuning in. If you are not following us on Spotify, please do so. And if you haven't given us a 5-star, it helps us out. It keeps us going and it keeps elevating marginalized voices. Moving into our guest today, I'm very excited. Her name is Karina Ho, also known as Oniko. Oniko is a musical artist who mixes electronic beats and sounds with her influences in blues, jazz, and classical music. Her new album is called Rodeo Pantheon. Please check it out on Spotify. She began this part of her musical journey back in 2014 when she became paralyzed in a car accident. She then released her debut album in 2017. She tells a universal story of overcoming loss and rediscovering love through her own narrative, and strives to promote visibility of disabled artists in mainstream music. And so here we go. Now our phones are on, and now we have mentioned elderly animals. What the hell? What the hell?
I know.
You should have told me to put my phone in airplane mode before you came over, because now my Instagram feed's going to be locked and loaded with all these.
It's going to share, like, end of life, crossing the rainbow bridge content.
Oh, my God. And then I'm just crying in bed, because what I do in the morning is I look through my Instagram while I poop.
Yeah, me too.
And then I end up crying about some dog in Montana while I'm pooping.
But I find it very cathartic. It's like where I get my daily
releasing
emotional release.
So my icebreaker question, if you could be anything in a kitchen, anything you could find in a kitchen, but it can't be food, what item would you be and why?
The Asian side of me wants to say a beautiful Japanese knife.
Okay.
You cut and it's like the most beautiful. You're like an artist. You're like the artist of the kitchen.
Yeah.
You know?
That's a really good one.
Yeah, that's what I would do.
Man, that's so good. I don't even have, like, I've looked up knives. Like, they're kind of pricey, you know?
They're very pricey.
I have a, not even mediocre. It's like something that's like $30-something, you know? And so I don't even have what you would be in my kitchen. That's how.
I have one, only because my friend works at Sur La Table.
Okay.
And gave me an employee discount, and it was also on sale during the holidays. But,
Little VIP vibe to you then.
Little VIP vibe. And it is really, I don't think I would have had that answer had I not gotten that. It's
okay.
Like my first step into adulthood.
There you go. You've been shown the light. It's like a bidet. Like once you've used one, then
which
you're like,
I also
oh man.
Have.
You know, they're very important. And then now that you, Japanese knife, now you're like, what am I? I go to people's houses and I'm like, this is what you cut an onion with? Like, this is bad for your hand. And then it turns into, like, a medical thing. And I'm, like, pushing towards a good knife because of my mother's arthritis or whatever, you know?
So that's me. That's what I would contribute to your kitchen.
A knife. I like that. So I saw online that you're a classically trained pianist.
Yes.
Very classy. It goes with your knife vibe.
I am a classy
VIP vibes. But tell me, what age did you start? And how did being a pianist shape who you are today? Like how you may look at things?
Well, I am actually the most stereotypical Asian person. I feel like every first generation Asian kid starts out life playing the classical piano, maybe the violin, and then maybe going to some language school on Saturdays.
Yeah.
Like
before your 4-year university.
Yeah. Jump. Before your, yeah. So all parents for some reason think that is what makes a well-rounded kid.
Yeah.
So yeah, I started out life just playing lots of classical music but never told that I could be an artist.
Yeah.
The only 3 career paths that were available to me that I told existed basically were doctor, lawyer, or business.
Yeah.
I actually remember going up to my mom and saying that I wanted to be an artist. I was like 9. No, I said I wanted to be an actor. And she was like, Chinese people don't become actors. And it was the 90s, so she wasn't wrong, but it was not very
inspirational. Well, what about in China? What's up with the cinematography
China? In China, maybe, but she was like, everyone's really racist here. I mean, she was not wrong. She was not wrong.
Yeah, you're just going to be pigeonholed, maybe.
And I'm terrible at acting, so that, you know, it's okay. So classical music, I think it was such a privilege. Gave me the chops. I could do like fancy stuff. Love me some Chopin. Love me some Rachmaninoff.
Yeah.
But it was really only until I discovered black music. First, like I listened to Jimi Hendrix in high school, and that just like cracked my musical world open.
Yeah.
And made me want to not play classical music anymore.
Yeah.
And so that really set me on this journey of breaking away from just like the traditions that my parents told me were what was good.
Yeah, it's like you get really good at the foundation of the maybe really complex, intricate, different timing from a different time thing. Mm-hmm. And then you find your own way and you bring in these other aspects. And
yeah.
So, yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, so then the follow-up question to that was, how did that shape you as a person now? Being classically trained, playing music for so long, how do you navigate life differently?
I think more so than classical music, it was more just going back to me being a stereotypical Asian kid. I feel like most Asian kids are, and I don't want to be generalized, but I feel like I'm pretty correct on this. Most first generation kids are not told to do something risky, like become an artist. So I always dreamed about it. I played in bands growing up. I played just rock music. I played jazz music. And I low-key dreamed of being a rock star, but always kept like a very responsible office job.
Yeah.
So it was always like my side hustle. And I just couldn't feel – I never felt empowered because I always felt like my mom would just whoop me, which she probably would even as an adult. And it was only after she passed away that I started to go on this artistic journey. So that's kind of, not quite answering your question.
No, but that's awesome that it helped, you know, it helped you find your path.
Yeah.
Your authentic path.
It started me in a very boxed path. Yeah. Because classical music, as beautiful and gorgeous and amazing as it is, it does, it's based on... like limits. You're given music and you follow the music, and that's kind of it.
Yeah. And now you can put any notes on the sheet that you want, right? Hey,
yeah.
Stick it with the musical vibe.
Yeah.
Awesome. So yes, I wanted to talk about, so then moving into your album, you recently just released an album, Rodeo Pantheon. Mm-hmm. And, just please tell me about that. I found it very chill and meditative and calming to listen to. I did it, listen to it while just doing work, and I really appreciate your work. So
thank you.
I love to hear.
I appreciate that. Like I said, I feel like, you know, as an indie artist, you put your heart and soul into things and you put it out and like five people listen to it. So that really means a lot to me.
That's how comedy is too sometimes, you know, but I really did appreciate it.
Yeah. We're all just hustling until we make it.
Yeah.
But, so it's my first full-length album. It took a long time to make because I produced everything by myself. Yeah. I'm a music producer, but by training, as you already asked, I'm a pianist. So I actually had no idea how to electronically put together whole compositions until fairly recently. So with every song, I feel like I was able to explore more and really dig into myself as an electronic music producer. And... I think the vibe of the album is sort of kind of sums up the last 10 years of me navigating a lot of personal loss and trauma, but also a lot of upsides. So,
Yeah, I feel like getting to know you, some of your lyrics, when I go through it, I really feel like getting to know your story a little bit. It is really reflected in the music, and it makes me feel, I don't know from where you might intentionally be coming from, but I am on the wavelength, I feel like, of where you are. And so, I guess I wanted to talk about a specific song which got my attention because it's in a different language. Mm-hmm. And so I don't want to butcher the Taiwanese language by trying to say it.
Diodio Dong.
One more time.
Diodio Dong.
Yes, Diodio Dong.
Diodio Dong.
Okay, I kind of got it.
Okay, because they're not actual words. They're all onomatopoeias to represent the rhythmic chugging of a train going through a mountain tunnel. It was the last song that my mother taught me. So I don't know if you are aware. So the reason why I'm in a wheelchair is because I was in a car accident. Mm-hmm. My mother was also in that accident and passed away as a result. And so a lot of what I do as an artist is kind of an homage to her and the way she like prepared me for life. So she grew up in Taiwan. She immigrated from Taipei in the 70s. And the last time we went to Taiwan together, she taught me that song. And so as I was thinking about new music, I kind of wanted to do just like an electronic remix of something that was traditional and close to me personally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. That's really cool to be able to bring that back. You know, makes it feel like it's everlasting now, you know?
Yeah. It's very different from the original.
As are you. Your mom is the original song and you are kind of like the electronic remix,
and,
you
like,
know?
The hipster version of
Yeah. But you carry the energy on.
I do. Yeah. I mean, she was a tiger mom. And even though if I was a parent, I would not be a tiger mom. But I think that energy really prepared me to deal with some hard shit in life.
Yeah.
So I do appreciate it. Yeah. Now, if you asked me like 10 years ago, I would have said many different things.
Yeah. So I would love to actually go through some of your songs then. And as you tell me about this journey, and thank you so much for sharing yourself. And like, I could only imagine the hardship of having to go through something like that. And it's so beautiful that you're able to create something from such types of traumatic experiences into something so beautiful that like, you know, we get the privilege of, you know, listening to today. So
I'm
just really appreciative of what your healing process is becoming and what fruit you're producing in that process. But some of your songs have lyrics available, which I was looking on Spotify.
Wait, they don't all have your lyrics available? I need to check on that.
I know, right? Do they all have it? I don't know if they all, but I'm a big sing-alonger, so I always look at lyrics if I can. But I guess, is there any particular song, if, you know, of course you feel close to all of them in different ways. Is there any particular song that you would want to maybe unpack a little bit? I would love to do that with some lyrics.
Yeah. I mean, the song Rodeo Pantheon.
Okay. I'm going to skip to it and I'm going to pull up the lyrics right now.
I believe is the third song in the album. The name Rodeo Pantheon I stole from a gay cowboy artist. So that is not original. But the song itself, I wrote about my experience taking antidepressants because I think this is a fairly common experience.
Yeah.
We exist with low levels of depression and we may not even realize it for like years. And then we suddenly realize how heavy we've been feeling. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, it's crazy. So I didn't realize, well, I mean, I've long been against medication. I think, you know, with the shame and the stigma and blah, blah, blah. Finally, my therapist convinced me to try antidepressants and it blew my mind in that it just brought me from like a low level, like feeling heavy and down all the time to just neutral.
Yeah.
And that was like, that was such a relief. I felt like so much just to be at neutral. I was like, oh, this is what you're supposed to feel like.
Yeah.
And that's what inspired the song. I mean, if you listen to the lyrics, when you follow doctor's orders, you feel so good.
Yeah.
And the end, I feel so numb was kind of the beginning, because I don't know if everyone has this experience, but I personally felt a bit void of emotions at first. And then I kind of got into it. But for like a good month, I was like, where did my emotions go? Like, why am I not crying every day?
Yeah.
So that was sort of, it was that whole sort of journey of getting used to antidepressants.
Yeah. Did you feel like that feeling of depression came on after the accident? Or did you feel like it was something that was always underneath, that just a different positionality in life put you into the situation to want to take antidepressant pills?
It was definitely circumstantial. So the accident really, really challenged me and continues to challenge me every day.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was dealing with a lot all at once. Like I was injured when I was 27 years old. So like, you know, the peak of being in your young adulthood, seeing everyone else around you getting married and doing this and that, and you're just, you know, trying to make it to the next day. So the first few years were really tough, and that I think I carry around a lot of those memories, mm-hmm. and that fuels a lot of the art that I make now.
Yeah. What did you find were some of the biggest challenges from getting around and now having to use a wheelchair in your everyday life? What did you find was a challenge of getting used to that life?
Well, as a woman, my upper body strength was just non-existent.
Okay.
So pushing your ass around is really hard.
Yeah.
And I'm quite buff now.
Okay, yes.
I go climbing. Nice. But back in the early days, I was super weak. So I could barely get myself around anywhere, which then caused social anxiety because I was afraid to like go places where I didn't really know that many people mm-hmm. who could possibly, you know, help me if I needed it.
And, yeah.
So it was like, yeah, a lot of overcoming. Also just the kind of bodily issues that come with being in a, like a young person in a wheelchair. People just like look at you differently. They treat you differently. You experience what ableism feels like. That's a rough transition.
Real quick for some listeners, could you tell us what ableism means?
Ableism is is discrimination towards people with disabilities. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe not so much. It's a bias against and a hierarchical bias based on your ability. So if mm-hmm. you're disabled, if you have less ability, you're kind of demoted in terms of hierarchical stature.
So something about Rodeo Pantheon, about the music video I saw, the little clip on Spotify, it shows like puppets.
Oh, yeah.
So I just guess I wanted to know like where, what inspired the puppetry in your music video or in the little clip that I saw?
Well, I was looking at this Chinese shadow puppet theater.
Yeah.
It's this ancient art technique. Before they had, it's an ancient art technique, and it was a very interesting story. This emperor lost his favorite concubine. He really missed her, and one of his advisors discovered that by projecting lights onto cutouts, you could create like a whole scene.
Yeah.
And so they started to use puppetry and blah, blah, blah. So I used that idea, and I think, it's about a cat and a dog. And it's sort of the dog is sort of like going through my journey of mental health.
Yeah. It was
really
cool.
And it's just supposed to be kind of wacky and surreal, and that's it.
It fits it. Thanks. It fits. It goes with the vibe.
Yeah.
So I guess you also mentioned that you're into rock climbing.
Oh, yeah.
Which I find super interesting. Please help me understand, how do you prepare to go for a climb? But also, I'm just really interested how people, of course, you're only speaking from your experience, but people with spinal cord injuries, how do you continue to make sure you're getting the physical activity that you need? Which rock climbing, that's a great outlet. So I guess I just want to hear about how you prepare and how, you know, a climb goes for you.
Yeah. Well, I'm paralyzed from my chest down. Mm-hmm. So I can't use my legs at all. Essentially, I use kind of a secondary pulley system.
Okay.
So two people, one person, it's called a belayer. They're basically, you're connected to a rope and they're just making sure you don't fall.
Yeah.
So I have a second person manage this pulley system that kind of takes a little bit of the weight off of me.
Yeah.
So for me, rock climbing is essentially doing just full on pull-ups.
Yeah.
So it takes about a third of my weight off. So instead of pulling up 120 pounds, I only have to pull up 90 pounds, which is still insane. And doing that over and over again.
You are getting super fit, like buff, with all of these upper arm workouts or upper body workouts.
It's a fun activity, but I feel very self-conscious about getting too buff.
Yeah.
Going back to that ableism thing, you know, as women, we're supposed to have
delicate
bodies. So when you're like a monster in your biceps and not a monster everywhere else, you just start to feel self-conscious. And I hate that.
I hear what you're saying about upper body strength and then it being different from other places. I hear what you're saying in regards to that.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Instead of just like, hey, I'm really buff, I can break your dick off.
Yeah, you know,
like that
exactly.
could be scary looking
I
too.
I could break someone's dick off, to be honest.
You probably could.
Fucking strong. Wait, am I allowed to say, are you going to
yeah,
edit out
say it
out.
Oh, no, okay. I love it. You could. Oh my goodness. I like that vibe though. That's good. You know, you have to have that kind of strength.
Yeah, especially because I live alone. I do everything by myself. Yeah. And so I just need to be on point all the time, physically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you were saying, you were mentioning earlier, the time frame in your life that this accident happened, you were 27 and you know, you're in a young adult place and, you know, we're meeting people, you're talking about dating now. One thing that I know that I've come across when researching, you know, paraplegic people is that people tend to assume when it comes to sex and sexuality, people tend to assume that some people with disabilities, some people that are paraplegic are asexual or cannot have sex, which is a misconception. So I guess I'm just wondering on your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I found that the number of stupid questions I've gotten is insane.
And invasive.
And so invasive. It's like my spine's broken, not my vagina.
Yeah. And also just because your spine is broken doesn't mean that that
it just
breaks
up
the barrier.
And moved away. Like, it's still there.
And they're like, can I ask you these? Like
if you don't mind me asking, how do you have sex? And I'm like, literally, I just spread my legs. Like, it's just the same.
Yeah.
I still enjoy having sex as much as anybody else.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a common misconception. Unfortunately, it's like the way that moms kind of get like desexualized.
Yeah.
Just because you had a kid, you're done. You're a withered flower.
Or just even older women.
Older women. Yeah. Same thing with disabled people. You're just put in this like asexual, desexualized bucket.
Yeah.
And it sucks. So dating has been harder.
Yeah.
You get a lot more stupid questions. It does serve as like a good asshole filter though, because like assholes are just not gonna like wanna even go there.
Yeah.
So luckily I haven't met any like truly disgusting people.
Yeah.
But I still get those questions and there's so much educating, which shouldn't be my job, but it is my job. I mean, it becomes my job because people are idiots. But yeah, just for anyone listening, disabled people enjoy having sex and can have sex. And some of us can bear children, just like non-disabled people. Some people, yeah.
And I feel like some people can also maybe have a different idea of what sex can be. I feel like some people might be so limited to just think sex is just penetrative. P in the V. But also we have like erogenous zones and like tongues and like breath and like words, and sometimes
getting so advanced here.
Yeah, like sometimes if my neck gets licked the right way, it super turns me on, you know.
And as someone who is paralyzed, I don't feel the same way.
Yeah.
So yeah, totally. Other things besides penetration are like very necessary.
Soft caresses.
Ugh, love a soft
caress. Give me your arm.
I love.
Just like a soft caress sometimes. It's like, oh my gosh, it's really like, and I feel like this heteronormative world, and sometimes it's hard because people just think like, gotta get my dick in and oral. Those are the things, you know? And it's just like,
it's so unimaginable.
It's like that scene from Friends, you know, where she's like seven. Do you remember that scene? Oh, you know, Monica is dating, where Monica's explaining how she has different zones and how she would like her dream man to go to which zone. And then she's like, 1, 2, 3, 1, 4, 4, 5, 4, 5, 6, 6, 6, 7, 7. And, you know, it like goes like to all these different zones. And I feel like that needs to be
more like men need like literally a roadmap.
Yeah.
Of how the body works.
Yeah. Like you were saying, education. You're like, I'm tired of educating them.
I'm really, so I unfortunately fell victim to TikTok. So I spent way too much time on it. But what I'm really appreciating is this increasing conversation around, you know, just women or non-men choosing to not prescribe to all these, you know, very heteronormative milestones in life.
Yeah.
You know, I'm in my 30s and I'm single and I'm pretty cool about it.
Yeah.
I'm really loving it. Really enjoying. I bought my own house. Like, oh, I'm doing the
congratulations.
Thing.
Congratulations.
And I'm just, you know, yeah.
I think we have to look at it differently, like you're saying, too. Like, there's so many amazing things you can accomplish when single.
Yeah.
When not having children.
Like, touring.
Yeah.
Musically. Like, I don't have to feel tethered to anybody.
Yeah.
And honestly, I think that, you know, as an artist, not only am I trying to, like, preach the word of disability inclusion, but I'm just trying to show up as, like, a woman who's not white and who's not able-bodied and just... Yeah. Come off as like I'm doing my thing and I do it well. Well, hopefully I come off that way, but that's
You do.
I think just taking up space in that way is really powerful. You don't even have to make some political statement, you know? Yeah. So
I guess I'm wondering, when I think about your different intersections now, it makes me think, if I think about your intersection as a woman, your intersection as someone who has a disability, or how do you prefer? What do you prefer me saying? Sometimes I don't know. Sometimes people have a problem with the word disability, or sometimes I don't know what language.
Disability's fine. Yeah.
Okay, great. So I'm wondering about intersections in regards to you're a woman, you have a disability, and you're dating. And I wonder, a man that has a disability and is dating, you know, we have two similar intersections here, but one is different, which is biological sex and maybe the gender roles that you may perform. But then those gender roles in our society reflect different things, like caregiver and being taken care of. So I wonder, what have you felt is a difference that you've observed from maybe, you know, maybe different from what a man may experience in the same positionality when trying to date in a hetero world with a disability?
Yeah, I mean, I think both part, like the whole disability thing makes just life complicated.
Yeah.
For a woman, I think people kind of see you, they place that expectation that you're supposed to be the sexy, you know, feminine. And so when you come at with a disability and you, they may not think that you are that.
Yeah.
Similarly with males, like you're supposed to be macho and strong and be the, you know, caretaker. So if you're disabled, people may discredit you because you can't be like the hot like woodcutter husband or whatever. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we're both working against these like stereotypes.
Yeah.
And it unfortunately does make dating more complicated. But in a way, I think just being out there, like I think when people see me on the like Hinge or whatever, like you inherently think about. Ask yourselves, you know, I think people will question, what do they think about me?
Yeah.
So my whole thing is just like being present in spaces where people don't usually see folks with disabilities is really powerful in itself. And it's taken me a lot of many years to come up with like the courage to just put myself out there.
Yeah.
Artistically, dating wise, just in general. But now that I'm doing it more, I think that it's challenging people. Because they don't expect it.
Yeah. Outside of what we were talking about earlier in regards to sexually, what are other misconceptions? What are some misconceptions that people have about you or paraplegic people that you've experienced?
I think, unfortunately, people tend to underestimate me. Mm-hmm. I feel very frustrated because I think when people see me, they mainly see the wheelchair, and it leads them to be really patronizing. Like some people go as far to like pat me on the head like a dog. Like it's so condescending. It's so infantilizing. They don't see, and to, you know, I'm in my own body and my own life, and I see myself as this like badass lady who's doing her thing. But it's so frustrating to me that no matter what I do, no matter how independent I am, people still just are hung up on the wheelchair thing. Mm-hmm. So they just need to get over it. Like, it's not my job.
Yeah. Have you ever used your wheelchair as a weapon?
Yes.
To maybe shove people out the way?
I tend to avoid crowded spaces. But the few times I am at a show or a bar where because my face is at like ass level, people be farting on me unknowingly, I will just shamelessly run into people's shins because I don't have the time, you know?
You're like, watch where you fart, motherfucker. Yeah, I mean, I look around. I look around when I do a public fart. I want to know, what are the consequences? Who's going to hear or see
this? You're very considerate because most people don't care, especially dudes. Yeah. They just rip. They give no shits. And I'm there and my face is there.
So I have a question about what able-bodied people, what can people do to make life easier for the disabled?
You know, it's not something that I had to think about when I was able-bodied, so I totally get when it's like out of sight, out of mind.
Even thinking about you coming into my place.
I really appreciate it.
It's nothing something I thought about before.
And it's not something I ever had to put 2 seconds of thought. And so I get it, but I think this is a great question because it can bring to light that a fifth of the world's population has a disability. Yeah. That's a
lot.
Billions of people we're talking about.
Visible and invisible.
Visible and invisible, cognitive, physical, whatever. Mm-hmm. And I think it's about being people's allies. So if, you know, asking questions, advocating for accessibility, if someone, you know, I'm typically the only disabled person in most places I'm in. Mm-hmm. And so if I have access needs or something, having other people advocate and be my allies and be like, no, we need to make sure there's a ramp, or you know, we need to make sure the power in numbers. Yeah. And it makes me feel less alone because often I am usually advocating for myself.
Yeah.
But when other people fight the good fight with me and can empathize with my experience, it really is quite empowering and it makes me feel closer to them. And I hope it does the same like them from towards me.
Yeah, because accessibility can be so foundational for so many different groups.
And yeah,
so
everyone, like a ramp, everyone can use it. People with strollers, people with bicycles. So it's just, you're advocating for making everyone's lives easier, essentially.
Yeah, and how have you faced any of these challenges when being a performer at, like, the venues?
Oh, my God. Like, the majority of venues are inaccessible, and I have to be lifted like a Nubian queen in front of like a whole audience, which, you know, sounds cool, but it's scary. You're trusting people to not drop you.
Mm-hmm. You feel disruptive to your vibe.
Yeah.
You know, performing.
Totally, yeah. Totally. And I know there's some artists out there who refuse to perform in any venues that are inaccessible, but unfortunately you're sort of ruling out like all venues.
Yeah, and so, as an artist, sometimes it's like, what do I have access to in regards to just where I'm at in my level of art?
Yeah, and that it speaks loudly when most places aren't accessible because it's like, you're not welcome here. This is not a space where people like you turn up. So we didn't even need to think about you. And so I am trying to tour and perform more and to just basically disrupt that.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like my impetus. That's my motivation as an artist, is to just fucking disrupt shit with my moody ass melancholic music.
I don't have melancholic music, but I have a moody ass.
Great.
So I want to disrupt shit with my moody ass.
I used to love punk rock as a kid, and this is me trying to be punk rock as an adult.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
You're like, ramp it up, bitches. Ramp I want to perform here.
I don't want you to lift my ass. I want to get up there by myself.
Yeah, we ain't fucking unless you ramp it up.
I'm an independent woman.
Damn right. So the last question we ask, the last question I ask here to everybody is, how can someone, anyone, your family, friends, lovers, future people in your life better love you?
Oh, what a great question. I think empathy is everything. I think everyone, no matter what your life experience is, can use a little empathy. Mm-hmm. My life experience, because it's so extreme and not many people can relate to it. Like, I think some of my experiences are honestly like the stuff of nightmares. It's incredible. So when people make an effort, especially the people around me, make an effort to try to put themselves there, it means a lot. And I think it brings us closer because it's so isolating. I think anyone who may be listening who has experienced trauma, it's the most isolating thing because you truly feel like no one can understand you. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, empathy.
That was really beautiful.
Thank you.
Thank you for really sharing yourself and, you know, giving me perspective and hopefully listeners' perspective to help us be able to have a more conscious way of looking at the world so then we can make these changes to make, you know, things more accessible so everybody can take up space.
Yeah.
In those spaces.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. All right. So say your social medias so everyone can follow you, your music on whatever platforms it's all available.
So my album is called Rodeo Pantheon. My artist name is Nikho, N-I-K-H-O. And you can find me on Instagram and TikTok at Nikho Music.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. Please follow on all the social medias that she listed. Please follow us, Mouthful, Shanti Churan Comedy. If you would like, please give us a 5-star on Spotify. It helps. And listen to the album and also give that 5 stars.
Yes.
Because we are wonderful artists that are contributing to this world. And we need you to support us and take care of yourselves and wash your butts.
And don't fart on people.
And don't fart on people. Look back before you fart in public. God damn it. Oh, yay, Bernie. You just woke up in time.